Welcome to the Mom Manual. Motherhood doesn't come with instructions, but it should. We are on a mission to highlight ordinary moms doing extraordinary things to build the ultimate mom manual. Every week, I have the distinct honor of speaking with women about the lessons they've learned and the inspiration that got them to where they are today. Join us for a conversation that will spark creativity, provide actionable tips, and celebrate the ordinary and extraordinary moments of motherhood. The Mom Manual starts now.
Hello, everyone. Tara Williams here with the Mom Manual. We are going back to our original podcasting days when we only talked about sleep. And here we are again with two amazing women, Laura Hunter and Jennifer Walker. They are pediatric nurses with 25 years experience. They have 8 children between them, and they are co-founders of Moms on Call. So please give a warm welcome to Jennifer and Laura. Hello.
Oh. Yes, we're so excited to be here. Thank you, Tara. Thank you for inviting us. And we are. We're going to have a good time today. We're going to spill the beans. We are really going to help families around the world, hopefully, with sleep. And we often get asked, well, how did Moms on Call start? What does that mean? What is Moms on Call, yes. Right? Well, Jennifer and I were moms. Pediatric nurses on call. The moms part of that is Jennifer and I. And we were the after hours nurses for a busy practice in Atlanta. And we were on call. So we would go on call when the office closed in the evenings, and we would take those calls all night long until that office opened. And it wasn't unusual for us to take 300-400 calls a week. I did that for almost 20 years. I was on call about 90 hours a week, taking that many calls. So I have talked to lots and lots of families. And I have 5 children, like you said, between the two of us, we have 8 kids. I have 5, and I've been there. I've done a little bit of everything from nursing exclusively to bottles of formula only with that last one, you know. And we often, Jennifer and I, find ourselves laughing because we feel that we could not speak to the families that we speak to if we had not walked out so many of those things ourselves, right? Brent, kid number 5, was about a week old when our boss said, hey, look, y'all need to start seeing our new families and start going in proactively, right? Mm-hmm. Showing them all those basic day-to-day things like putting on a diaper and talking about nursing or doing bottles and routines and when to worry about this poop. And hey, you know what? We don't really have to worry about that poop. Yes. And so Jennifer and I wrote this folder. We printed it off of the computer and we began going into the homes of families here in Atlanta. And really, it's always so funny because I know that we're known as a sleep method, right? That's kind of what we're known for. But that was actually never Jennifer and I's intention. We started out to be a voice of hope and encouragement. That was our goal. Our goal was to kind of come into the house, come around the family and say, look, we're going to get through this together, and we're going to have really good days, and we're going to have really, really bad days. And our hope is to have more good days than bad, right? And I think even all of us, even with grown kids, are still probably saying, look, this week, if we could just have more good days than bad, that'd be really awesome. You know? And so that's really how it happened. And what Jennifer and I found after going into hundreds of families' homes was not only were many of the questions the same, but that things were a lot more alike than they were different. And if we could put a few things in place, increase the confidence of those parents, the sleep was actually a byproduct of that, a byproduct of the confidence of those families. And, you know, one of the things that we, sleep training, right? That's the big buzzword. You can find, oh, are you sleep training? That's the question that so many parents are
asking. Going to make those t-shirts, and the t-shirts were going to say on the back, ask me if I'm sleeping.
Oh, that's hilarious. Right. But what we've found is, one, you don't have to sleep train. We're born knowing how to sleep. That is a biological thing. Okay. We don't have to train ourselves to sleep. We know how to sleep. However, we can help put those few things in place, create some really good habits, work with those natural rhythms that allow that perfectly natural process to happen. Yeah. Sometimes I find that we just get in the way, right? We just find ourselves getting in the way of that natural process. And so a long story short, we made that folder. We actually did a consult with Kenny Rogers and his wife, Wanda, probably, I don't know, Jennifer, what, 19 years ago now, I think the twins are.
Yeah.
And Kenny was flipping through our folder that we printed off of the computer, right? And he's like, look, it's not copyrighted. It'll be copyrighted tomorrow morning.
Oh, I love that.
And Jennifer and I didn't know, you know, yeah. And he says, you know, it'll be copyrighted tomorrow morning. And sure enough, he ensured that that folder was copyrighted that next morning. But his best words of wisdom was, look, you can't hit a bullseye if you don't throw a few darts. And this is worth throwing a few darts for. And so that's what we did. We took that folder. We made our book one. We self-published, you know, we had the little youth pastor come and film us clipping nails and putting a diaper on. I mean, it was just crazy.
That was back in the day when we stuck a DVD in the back of the book, and it was one of the first resources ever, first of all, written by moms. All the other really, you know, successful baby books are written by doctors and mostly written by dads whose perspectives are wonderful. But we were coming at it from a very different perspective. And back in the day, our kids helped us. We like would stick the DVD in the back of the book so we could show families how to do it.
We and heel and stick.
Yes. 20 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 20 and we years have just ago. Like, yeah, harnessed every bit of every type of technology through the demand of the people that we have had the privilege to partner with. Like, they're like, I need to send this to my cousin. I like, Laura and I were just going to do this for the people at our practice.
Yeah.
Right. And it helped to decrease our call volume.
Which you was know,
when
the
they
goal.
Had the confidence. Yeah. And
we needed
like, no,
to
I need to send
too.
This. Yeah. Could you talk to my sister? She's in France. Like, sure. And yeah. So what we did was we set out to help the families that were put in our path to the best of our ability. And that's all we've ever done. That's what we wanted to do. And to come here now when we have the podcast and we're on Audible and eBooks and iBooks, and we have a 3-set series and online classes and Instagram and Facebook, the people that have come around us, the tiny but mighty team at Moms on Call, we all have one goal, and that is to help give, like Laura said, confidence and encouragement to be a voice that parents need to hear, because so much of the information nowadays, you know, is frightening. Like, here's the 5 ways you can ruin your kid. That, oh my goodness, thanks. I already thought about that every night before I go to bed.
Yeah.
Maybe something more helpful.
And I do, I want to jump in because I think one of the comments you made, Laura, might be a little controversial, right? That babies know how to sleep. And I have heard a lot of people reference when an infant for the first time takes 3-4 months, you're giving them the mush, what are we calling it? Avocado, whatever. They know how to eat and they know how to swallow, but it is like a learned behavior. Right. And so the first time they eat, they spit it back out and they don't know how to swallow and they don't know what's in their mouth. And, you know, of course, biologically, we know how to eat, but it is a learned behavior. So talk to me more about this. Is it nature, nurture? And I'll say one other thing before we jump into that. My first thought went to, yes, it is a learned behavior. And yes, if as a parent, you just put your baby in their crib every night, eventually they would realize like, okay, I need to go to sleep. And that's called the cry it out method, more or less, which people don't love. But do we get in the way because then we want to speed up the process? We are not patient and we're like, ooh, I'll just rock them to sleep because it's easier. I will nurse them to sleep because it's easier. I will take them into my bed because they sleep much cozier in the warmth of my body and my arms. So that was my thought, but I'm going to let you answer that, Laura.
So no, I absolutely believe that if we put a few key things in place,
yeah,
then they will drift off to sleep.
Got it.
Every single time. Yeah. So, and a few of those things is routine. Our bodies work, their bodies tell time by doing the same thing at the same time every day. Yep. So once we put that routine in place, mm-hmm. and then we look at that sleep environment, which under 12 weeks of age includes a really good swaddle. And there is certain techniques that work better than others. For some kids, it doesn't matter how you swaddle. They love it. It works out great. Some kids, if it's not done like precisely the way that we say, they hate it. And if they hate it, they're going to try and come out of it. So doing a really good, correct swaddle under 12 weeks of age, setting up a safe sleep environment, which means nothing in the crib but the baby and swaddled if they're under 12 weeks of age. And that's it. Using a sound machine. We talk a lot about sound machines, and sound machines, not all are created equal, right? So we want to make sure that we're using a high quality white noise. And the best way that I can describe it, and of course, those that are listening won't quite see what I'm doing, but some sound machines have more of this. It's just kind of that varying, almost a staticky sound. You're really looking for a sound machine that is more even. It's more of that even frequency that's not super high pitched. So you use a really good sound machine. And then we do the same thing over and over and over again. And you mentioned solids, and that is a good point. Yes, there is some learned, but oral motor development is progressive. So whether you're not really teaching them how to swallow and chew and swallow and you know, enjoy the textures in their mouth, you're just exposing them. There is a difference. We don't have to teach them to swallow. They know how to swallow. But oral motor development is progressive. So we don't want to hand a kid a chicken leg when they've never been exposed to some purees. And so, you know, in the knowledge center, we have a really good solid food introduction calendar. Not that you have to follow it exactly, but it's a guideline. And the biggest thing that we tell our families when we're starting solids is oral motor development is progressive. Yes, start off with some purees because it's just fun and we're just trying to get our feet wet, so to speak. Yep. And but don't stay there. So you go from puree to less puree to fork mushed to hopefully finger mushable within a span of about 4 to 6 weeks. Right. Then you're putting stuff on their tray and letting them explore and squish and drop and all those fun things. But so back to sleep. No, you don't have to teach them to sleep. But we are going to be in control of putting a few things in place so that they can do what they're perfectly capable of doing.
Oftentimes we'll describe it as returning them to factory settings.
I love that. Okay. And Laura and Jennifer have prepared 3 takeaways for our calls. So Jennifer, maybe I'll have you do it the first one for us. So routines can promote healthy growth and development. Tell us about the healthy growth. I think about, there's a brand called Love Every and they make these toys. And during COVID, a lot of my friends were buying them. They were like, it's going to make my baby smart. That's why I'm buying it. And I was like, wow, there's toys that make our baby smart. But with sleep, you really can grow healthy and develop in a healthier way than not sleeping. So I'd love to get into this, a little bit of the science behind that, just for anyone who's listening and doesn't really understand the true nature of health. What is it? Sleep hygiene, I think is what it's called.
And the benefits, which we hear about all the time for adults,
right?
We're like, oh, you have to get sleep. Look at all the diseases it helps prevent. Yeah. Look at the stress. Look at how it decreases some of that production of the cortisols and the, you know, stress hormones. Now they have to have a certain amount of stress is really healthy for us as human beings, but we want to be able to give that brain that is working and exploring and growing faster in the first 2 years of life than it will at any other time in the lifespan. And we want to give that brain the rest that it needs. And so a lot of times we talk to our parents about how to promote rest. And that's what the white noise machine does. When Laura was talking about that, it doesn't necessarily drown out the other noises in the room. What it does is it helps the brain to get into a state of relaxation. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier to slip into that sleep state. And everything is in rhythm. You can go to the beach where we love to be, and you can watch how everything is created with this incredible rhythm. And we're the same way. And so we've heard these buzzwords like circadian rhythms. Yeah. And when we fly, if any of you, you know, had the privilege to go from one time zone to another with small children, you realize like, oh, how do we do this and keep them on routine and deal with the jet lag? Sunshine and routine, and our bodies amazingly adjust. Like the sun is our friend. Yeah. So once our bodies are kind of aware of the different aspects of that sunlight, it works within us to release some of those hormones that help us to either rest or stimulating. And that's what circadian rhythms do as well. They use the environment to help our bodies to recognize patterns. And so sleep routines are really helpful because it helps our brains to be able to know what's expected. And when Laura was talking earlier about using ways that babies learn to promote great sleep, because we can't reason with them, which would be brilliant. Hey, here's all of this going down tonight. I'm thinking 12 hours. How do you feel about that? Would be awesome. But we can't do it that way. So we have to use the ways that they learn at this age. And they learn by association and routine. They learn by the outside stimulus. They're going to associate crib time with sleep time, just like what you were talking about earlier. They associate the amount of light. So we recommend at nap time, having a little bit of light come through the windows, but at night it's pitch black dark as we can get it. Why? Because we're giving these indicators to the body that we can't do by reasoning and just using those ways that they learn. So when we fall into more of those predictable routines, we see over and over again, thousands of times, how not only is it helpful for the babies, but it's helpful for the parents to know, like, I, especially if you have multiple kids and you have schedules and routines and work and side jobs and, you know, I need to have that semblance as well. So it reduces the overall amount of stress in the household. And we also like to say, like, not only the neurobiology behind what's happening as we progress and understand more about the environment around us, but also with, I would say, the biology of the household. Like, we are not just serving one. This, we're living together, and we want to make that be able to serve all of us. So it's important not only for babies, but for us to be at our best and enjoy this.
And I think about, I have four children. They're 5, 8, 10, and 11, and they all go to the same school. They're all in elementary school together. Woo-hoo! And every morning, you know, it's a great year. We have one more year of this. It's fantastic. But every morning, my 5-year-old in kindergarten, it just throws a tantrum. It is literally without a doubt every morning. He lost his shoes. He doesn't like the color of his oatmeal. He smells a bad smell. I mean, it could be anything. And it continues from the time he wakes up until the time that I drag him through the kindergarten gate. And the teachers, I'm like, is he fine? And they're like, literally, he's fine within 1 minute. But it just causes absolute chaos with the other three kids, with me, with my husband. Oftentimes I'm on calls for work and my husband will take them and the kids are running in. I mean, it's just chaos. So, you know, taking that, and then if we're thinking about kids who share rooms, parents waking up all night, as the adults, you're fighting with each other. Who's going to take the baby this time? Who's going to get him that time? Exhausted the next day at work, you know, not performing well. Then that leads for adults into you're tired. So you're grabbing, you know, McDonald's instead of making dinner. And then you've eaten bad, so you're not going to work out. And like, it just becomes this horrible routine. But, you know, when we go back to, and I can see that very clearly, when we go back to babies, have there been any studies that show like babies who are more well-rested have a higher IQ in life or have less, you know, prone to illness or disease? I mean, is there any quantifiable data to really say, like, if you do not sleep train your baby, you're going to have a worse outcome? I mean, I don't hear it, right? But have long-term studies or other ever been done?
Yes. So the answer is yes and no. Number one, you can make a study say whatever you want it to say. Mm. Number two is what the studies that are done with quality. And if you've read any of them and know how to read them, you understand, like, I don't just read the conclusion. I read how many were studied. Is this like 8 kids? And I just made some observations. Is this, you know, over time, what did we exclude? Was it double blind? Like, there's so many ways to read those. But what we do have unequivocally, as far as scientifically, yeah, is that kids who grow up in an environment that has a lower level of intense stress, kids that feel like they can relax at home. And this is such great news for all parents, because we want you to know that the most important thing is that you are there and you are theirs and you're connecting. And those are the things that actually they've studied that may help, like you said, broaden their IQ. Some genetic factors broaden their IQ. But what we're trying to do is develop a household that serves everybody. And when it does, that's what shows serves the kids. So whether you sleep train or not, yeah, can your child be smart and successful and love you? The answer unequivocally is yes. Yeah. Yes, they can. Yeah. If it's chaotic and you're just holding on, you know, by your bootstraps, can those kids still run the world? 100% yes, they can.
Today's episode was brought to you by Dreamland Baby. I want to introduce you to a product that hundreds of thousands of parents use to help their baby sleep, the Dreamland Baby Weighted Sleep Sack. Hi, I'm Tara Williams, host of the Mom Manual and founder of Dreamland Baby. When my son Luke was 6 months old, he was still waking up every hour and a half. I was completely exhausted, frustrated, and at my wit's end. Sound familiar? My solution: to create a gently weighted sleep sack that babies can safely wear to help them feel calm, fall asleep faster, and stay asleep longer. The award-winning, doctor-approved Dream Weighted Sleep Sack and Swaddle features our proprietary CoverCom technology, evenly distributed weight from your baby's shoulders to toes, to help naturally reduce stress and allow your little one to feel relaxed and sleep soundly. If you're struggling to get your baby to sleep for longer stretches and go down easier, you're not alone. This product was a game changer for my son and can be for your family too. And right now, we've got a special discount exclusive to Mom Manual listeners. Use code MOMMANUAL15 at checkout to get 15% off site-wide. Isn't it time for you to invest in rest?
And, you know, I think there's times and there's seasons, right? There is, when I look at my family, I'm like, I don't know what happened this kindergarten year, but we're having a chaotic morning every morning, but we didn't have that at preschool. And, you know, I'm hoping it's just a phase, but same with the sleep. I mean, I think, you know, one thing I thought was so interesting when I started the company of Dreamland Baby. So we have the sleep sacks that are gently weighted, and they do offer incredible sleep to certain people, but as you guys would probably know, it's these babies who already, you know, have a routine, who are sleeping independently in their crib, et cetera. And they maybe need just one more tool in the toolbox. And we have stories where my son, I mean, he slept 12 hours the first night, and that's common, right? We hear that first week. I had people reaching out when I first launched the company, said, my 1-month-old isn't sleeping 12 hours. I want a refund. And I was like, wait, what? So I think there is, you know, and obviously as the company has grown and developed over the 5 years, we have refined our marketing message to make it very clear. You will, you know, if you have a 1-month-old, maybe we're going to get you an hour instead of 45 minutes, but 15 minutes is meaningful when you have a 1-year-old. Yes. So we're going to try to extend those sleeps age appropriately.
Well, I think realistic expectations, right? That's and right. And that's the thing, is when we're talking about realistic expectations at Moms on Call, again, let's make it clear. You don't have to do Moms on Call, and you guys are great parents. With Moms on Call, what we typically see when we put those few things in place that we have set out is 1 to 2 feedings at night in the middle of the night from, you know, all the way right up until about 8 to 10 weeks of age. Somewhere around 8 to 10 weeks of age, we start to get an occasional through the night night. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever, right? And then typically by 10 to 12 weeks, we're getting more through the night nights than not,
Right.
Not that it's perfection every night, not that we're not going to still have those bad nights, but that's the realistic expectation. And I think so often we come up with, you know, well, my baby should be sleeping through the night at 6 to 8 weeks because five of my friends said their babies were sleeping through the night. Well, let's hold up. What's realistic? And so really setting that firm foundation so that we can get, we often say, look, we can all be in survival mode, right? And right now you're finding yourself kind of in survival mode in those mornings, right?
Yeah.
But you can't stay there forever. So how do you move from survival to something that's more sustainable? Yeah. And that's where Moms on Call comes in. We come in with moving families from survival to sustainable, not perfection.
And you guys have mentioned several times in this call, you know, those few things, if you implement those few things, can we outline them like 1 through 3, you know, for anyone who's listening that needs to take out a notepad and write this down, what are your, is it 3 things, 5 things? You guys tell me those top things that if we implement these, you're good.
First off, routine.
Routine.
Get the routine. And we are pretty specific with times, not that those times can't be adjusted slightly to each individual family. We get it. Life happens, work schedules happen, pick up and drop off and all those things, right? But we really want to get onto a consistent routine where certain points of the day are your reset points because life happens.
Right.
So we want to be consistent from day to day. That's different than changing the routine from day to day, according to when they wake up in the morning, right? So some mornings they wake up at 6. So, okay, well, I'm doing a routine. I'm feeding every 3 hours. So today will be 6, 9, and 12, but then tomorrow they slept till 7. So tomorrow I'm still doing a routine of every 3 hours. So today's routine is going to be 7, 10, and 1. No, that's not what we're talking
about. Oh, that's not good. I was going to say, that's
not good.
Okay. No. Yeah, so give me an example of maybe what a, and you don't have to go into granular detail, but a general routine for, let's say, like a 3-month-old, you know, when we're talking routines, what are we talking?
Absolutely. So if we're looking at the Moms on Call routines, and we have them mapped out all the way through 4 years of age, we even have combined routines for families that have newborns and a toddler. Yes. We cover it. But if we're looking at a 3-month-old, they're still going to be eating about every 3 hours during the day. Yeah. So we like you to kind of have that intentional start point, right? So 7 a.m., we are opening the blinds and starting the day. Yeah. Jennifer really likes a much more gentle, sweet kind of, you know, peck on the cheek start to start her day in the morning. I'm more of, let's open the blinds and do some stretches and let's go and tackle the world, right? Yeah. So 7 a.m. is kind of that intentional start of the day within about a 15 to 30 minute grace period, okay? And you have grace periods. There's always a grace period that doesn't shift the rest of the routine. Mm. So we get them up, start the day, and do that first feeding. Then we're going to have some playtime. Playtime looks like preschool centers almost. So it's 5 or 10 minutes of tummy time and 5 or 10 minutes on their back and 5 or 10 minutes of snuggling and talking to them and 5 or 10 minutes of walking outside. And during that time, they may doze a little bit here and there, perfectly fine. Then we're going to get ready to head up for their nap. And that nap is going to fall somewhere around 8:30, 8:45. We're going to head up to their room. We're going to do a sweet pre-nap routine where you change their diaper and you love on them and do story time and baby, whatever you want that to look like. And then we're going to get them down for that nap. And we try to keep them in the crib as close to the next feed time as we can, at least for 2 naps a day. We know that every nap can't be that way. So at least 2, that's our focus. And then that next feed's going to be at 10 a.m. And somewhere around 10 a.m., we will get them up and we're going to do that feed. And we start that process all over again until we get to the evening time. And the evening time is one of our favorite times of the day. And I'll let Jennifer talk a little bit about what that evening time and bedtime routine looks like and why it's so important to the household.
Yeah. So in the evening time, there's a couple of things that are really encouraging. And the first is that 3 months old, babies still don't have control of a lot of their muscle systems. Like nobody's going and taking a jog. So in the evening time, they do have a certain amount of energy they have to release. And oftentimes, like if we're working or somebody comes home from work, they come right in to that time where these kids are getting rid of that last bit of energy so that they can sleep well. But we don't want them to be fussy. So we're trying all these different ways. You know, we've heard everything, putting them, you know, on the top of the washing machine that shakes the car seat and they're strapped in. And just, I had a family who had a, an actual blow dryer, like tied around the crib.
And so horrible. Like, Do not do these
dangerous things, because it's the perspective. They have this energy that they have to release in the evening time. And when we structure that evening time to bring that in and we recognize that that's what's happening, then we can allow them, you know, that little bit of getting that energy out. So we have our supper time. And we want to keep 3 hours between supper and bedtime, because we want that last bedtime feeding to be a really good feeding. Mm-hmm. And we're going to know that in that time, after that supper time feeding, we're going to have some fussiness. We can do what we call, you know, little centers, or, you know, just a little routine of being on the little floor mat so they can get some tummy time, being in the bouncy seat, being in the swing. And if we'll just move them every, you know, 10 minutes, then we can kind of get through that kind of fussier time. And then, and this is so beautiful, and we've seen this be so helpful, we give them a nice warm bath. We have bath time, and we do this whole bath time routine. You can see it in the free videos at Moms All Call, how to give them a bath. And that warm water helps to get them ready for winding down for nighttime. So we do our last supper feeding, then we have a little, you know, kind of centers where we let them work out some of their energy. Tummy time is fantastic because we want them to develop some of those muscles that'll help them to release energy. When they're sitting up without support around 5 or 6 months, we see such a huge change in their affect at night. They're a lot calmer. And so, but until then, we're going to give them those centers, then we're going to get ready for this really nice bath time. You know, if we get a nap in there, that's fantastic. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't, but about an hour before bed, we do our nice relaxing bath. And then we go to our absolute favorite thing, which is what we call tender time. So we get them in there, we get put a little lotion on their arms and legs. We love on them, sing over them, all the fun things that made you want to have a baby. I had one family I did a consult for, and they held hands with their toddler and little baby, and they sang a song from, I think it was Moana. They were good at it. Like, it was amazing. I was like, I want to be a part of this family. This is fantastic. But they just had that nighttime routine. And then we take the lights down a bit. We do that last nighttime feeding right there in their room. And then we go ahead, give them their little burp, swaddle them up to about 3 months of age, but that's right at our corridor when they're, as you know, kind of getting stronger. And, you know, once they're breaking out of it or get to about 3 months of age, then they can learn to find their own comfy spot and move around a little bit. So, you know, depending on where they are in that process, we still do the same thing. We put them in the bed slightly, but pleasantly awake, even if the pleasantly doesn't last very long. Because sometimes they have that little last bit of energy that they need to get out. And, but that process happens every night, and it gives us a chance to connect. And as they grow older, Tara, like your kids' age, then that tender time turns into this amazing connection time where we tell them that we love them and we believe in them, and we're going to see them when the sun comes up. That's when their hearts are open to receive what we know and believe about them, because all the stimulation of the day has come down. And that's where we've connected all the way up through high school with our kids in those moments. And when we have that and the routine, that warm water relaxes them. That nighttime routine is so pleasant. Mostly, you know, you probably went through that time that I did with my twins where I just prayed, like, can I get through like a book without them trying to eat it or throw it at each other? That would be really nice. Yes. Right. So it sounds sweet, but you know, sometimes they have a lot more energy And then, you know, we do our nighttime routine. We get that last nighttime feeding. We get them in the bed slightly, but pleasantly awake. So when they get to twilight sleep about 2.5 hours after we put them down and they kind of come to that closest point of, you know, being awake, that it's not like, you know, you remember, like if you fall asleep on the couch, that's not usually where you sleep and you kind of wake up in the middle of the night. You're like, where am I?
Yeah.
What is this? So, you know, that's why we like them to be a little bit awake, because they will go in and out of these really great predictable sleep cycles. Every 2.5 to 3 hours, they're coming into twilight sleep and they may open their eyes and they may cool a little bit and they may make a few noises and settle back down into that next good long REM cycle. And so when they do that, I want you to know where you were when you fell asleep, so they're not startled and it doesn't, you know, make them kind of become more awake. Then we have the white noise machine, and that's helping indicate crib time means sleep time. White noise means sleep time.
So we have everything. Routine, like yes. The critical pieces, yep. Routine, which, yeah. Thank you. That was super detailed. And I'm hearing mostly it is like wake. Let me see. Wake, eat, play, sleep. Kind of in a cycle, plus tender time, which I love.
Yep.
And as you're talking about tender time, I'm like, half the time with my kids now, I mean, it's, you know, a couple days a week, someone doesn't get out of sports till 8 o'clock. And so it's like screaming, go to bed, stop talking. My boys share a room and my girls share a room. So
yes.
But no, I love that. And I think my husband's much better at that than I am, because I'm with them most of the day. And then, you know, at night,
you're done.
The hero
tap out.
Tell the stories. You know, we love dad. He tells us the nighttime stories. And I'm more like, go to sleep.
But either of those are a fantastic way to have the predictable routine when you have siblings.
Right. Yeah.
When they're that age, that's what they want. They want that interaction with each other. So, you know, for a 3-month-old, yes, it's definitely more tender. As we get older and we're in that, you know, those toddler years and beyond, then it gets a little bit more rambunctious. It gets a little bit more, you know, playing off. I'm just going to instigate both of us, Laura and I, having twins. There's always an instigator. So if they're sleeping in the same room, you know, I'm going to instigate to my heart's content. Then we'll fall asleep.
That's
so it does change.
Noise. Somebody smelled bad.
Somebody's touching my stuff.
Yeah, it's looking at me. I mean, one night it was literally my son was screaming, he's looking at me. I'm like, just close your eyes. All right, so routine. We have established super important. And then you've talked several times about a sound machine. So get so
that sleep environment. You know, that sleep environment. Having them in a safe crib, right? We prefer them to be in their nursery as soon as you get ready to put them there. If they're going to be in your room, then we want that bed or crib to be as far from your bed as possible. So put it on the other side of the room if they're staying in your room. Otherwise, we want them in their nursery in a crib that is a safe environment. And by that, we mean a nice firm crib mattress.
Yeah. No sleeping on couches.
No sleeping on couches. No sleeping on, you know, in the lounge chair in the living room, or the car seats in the living room, or, you know, whatever that is. I mean, it needs to be a safe sleep environment. And part of that safe sleep environment is that sound machine that we talked about earlier, a nice high quality. We say white noise, it can be brown or pink or, you know, whatever. There's 10,000 different ones out there now. But what you're looking for is that muted white noise, that muted sound that's not a varying frequency. And we definitely don't want a high pitch frequency.
Interesting. Okay. And what about pacifiers? I know that it has gone back and forth. Pacifier is good to reduce SIDS. Pacifier increases SIDS. Throw a bunch of pacifiers in the crib. You see people with that. Don't let your baby use a pacifier because then they'll be dependent. What do you guys think on that?
Oh my gosh. So, you know, we're really big in like, look, use the pacifier. We're swaddling, especially early on. We got their hands, you know.
Oh yeah, their hands are.
Yeah, they're down. We can't get, you know, they can't suck their own fingers, which is their, you know, nature's pacifier, right? So use a pacifier. However, I think the biggest misconception is babies should never make a sound.
So the second a baby makes a sound, we're throwing the passy in their mouth, throwing the passy in their mouth, throwing the passy in their mouth, versus using the passy kind of more as a last resort rather than a first resort. Use it in case of you're trying to get through the doctor's office or the grocery store. You're trying to buy another 5 or 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And so using the passy is perfectly fine. The best time to take that passy away is once their arms and hands are free. Once they're able to begin to get purposeful movement, then they can figure out how to get those hands or fingers. And honestly, just because they suck their hands or fingers for 6 or 8 weeks right after they come out of that swaddle, most stop by 7 or 8 months of age. So it's not that, oh my gosh, we're going to have a thumb sucker until they go to college. That's just not true.
Yeah.
If you don't take it away when you take the swaddle away, then the next best time is whenever you're ready.
<that's-> Sometime before 2.5 or 3, that's when it may kind of affect their teeth. They will be paying for some dental work.
Well, the truth is, yeah, it up doesn't to the matter. Time.
Yeah, 2.5 or 3.
That we could have a whole nother podcast on the pacifier, because I will tell you, my son, he is almost 6. He recently found one of his old pacifiers and like was happy as a clam to put it in his mouth and sleep through the night with it. And I was like, what is happening right now? He did not give it away until he was like probably, I mean, obviously he wouldn't have it during the day, but like anytime mid-5. Right around his 5th birthday. And he's still like right now, he's almost 6. If he could walk around socially acceptable with a pacifier in his mouth,
he'd be happy as a clam.
I've had those days. I get it.
I think we may need, the next thing that we,
I know we're wrapping on time. I'm going to leave you guys with a funny thought on the pacifier. So I distinctly remember being in 2nd grade. So at this point, I'm about 8 years old. And I was a big thumb sucker to the point where my mom had to put the stuff on my nail, the pepper, like I just wanted it on and on. And I remember putting my head in my cubby and just like sucking my thumb just for a second. Like I remember doing that. I mean, like I just need it, like just for 1 second. And this is, I'm like 8 years old. I have a visible memory of this.
And Tara, the truth of the matter is, look, if you've got a kid that's sucking their thumb, sucking their fingers, sucking a passy, yes, we may end up with some dental work.
Yeah.
But even if they didn't, you're probably still going to end up with some dental work.
Right. Yes. As long as it's not affecting speech, I'll say that.
That's right.
Love them. I think the big theme of everything that we're talking about here is, and Laura and I, we see this all the time, is there are so many little details that we think are going to make or break their life. And really, we already have the big things covered. So the parents that are asking those questions have the big things covered. Right. Is this make or break? As you know, the toddler specialist at Moms on Call, they always want to know, like, oh, is this going to ruin them? Am I doing it wrong? Yeah. And the answer is no. What you're providing by loving them and providing them with someone that wants to ask these questions on their behalf is so much more important and powerful. So love them in your own way. If they have a pacifier till they're 6, if you can't read a book without them throwing it, chewing on it, you know, and until they're, you know, 3 years old, all these things, they do that within a family.
Yes.
Go
and
back.
That's what really makes them successful.
Yeah.
Go back to what the truth is. The truth is your kids are loved.
Mm-hmm.
They are safe and they can do this crazy thing called living.
I love that so much. Thank you so much, Laura and Jennifer. You are both just a wealth of knowledge, 25 years as pediatric nurses. You look so young, by the way.
Yes. Hello. Good job.
Because you're well-rested, right?
That's right.
For everyone who's heard all the amazing things about Moms on Call, tell us where they can find you, connect with you.
So many ways, right? So momsoncall.com, of course, is the best way to get all of the resources in one place. So that's where you can get the ebooks and the Audible books. And the, we even have it in Spanish now, which we're so excited about. And all of our products, we have, you know, mattresses and we have, you know, the books and
online classes, personal consultations.
Personal consults are incredible. That's where you have one person that walks out all of these day-to-day crazy things that happen with you. They know your story, they know your goals, and they will help you get from here to there through those transitions that happen.
Is that you guys, or do you have a team of people at this point now?
We have a team. We have about 10 consultants across the country that are fantastic at just walking out that day-to-day reality. And Jennifer and I still do consults on occasion, you know, around the world, and it's so much fun. But that is a huge piece of just having one voice to help us through all of the noise that happens, right? But our knowledge center on the website is where everybody needs to go. That's where all the blogs are. That's where a bunch of free printable, downloadable resources are, so the basic videos. So we have a ton of basic videos out there. So just, you know, head to the Knowledge Center to get a ton of that information. And then of course, Instagram and Facebook as well.
I love it.
And whatever new technologies emerge, we are going
we'll figure to figure it out.
You'll be on.
We'll figure it out.
Amazing. Thank you for joining us, Laura and Jennifer.